Satan, angels, and the watchers. Preoccupation with the end times and fate of the world isn't anything new. Jesus' disciples asked about that in Matthew 24. Much of the end times speculation revolves around the appearance or presence of angels, the Nephilim, and events that mark the approaching catastrophe. We'll get into all that, but for now, we need to understand the nature of supernatural beings, specifically Satan and angels. The truth revealed in the scriptures is far different from the imaginative tales that have been produced in the past or at the present time. Understanding this is critical to our analysis of the Book of Enoch and its credibility. Let's deal with Satan first. The concept that his name is Lucifer is a misunderstanding of Isaiah 14:12. In that passage, Isaiah is referring to Nebuchadnezzar, and the idea of his being fallen is a statement of his power being neutralized by God's judgment against him. The idea that Satan is a fallen angel is perhaps based in part on statements made by Jesus, who stated he beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven in Luke 10:18. To place this in context, we know that Satan was in the world. He had tempted Christ in Matthew 4, and later he was involved in using Judas to betray Jesus in John 13:27. The idea of falling in Christ's statement in Luke 10 follows the return of 70 disciples spreading the word. The presence of the gospel and the fulfillment of God's plan to save mankind through the sacrifice of Christ neutralized the power and influence of the devil. God would do this through the revelation of the truth. The writer of Hebrews describes this neutralization of Satan's power and hold over humanity in his discussion of the effect of Christ's sacrifice. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage, in Hebrews 2:14 through 15. Death entered the world through the influence of Satan, and without the sacrifice of Christ, we have nothing to look forward to but destruction. When Jesus came into the world, preached, was crucified, and rose from the dead, Satan's influence and power took a death blow from which he will never recover. He has an influence, and as Peter states, he seeks to devour those he can in 1 Peter 5:8, but we have a weapon that will negate that influence if we embrace it. A factor that figures into this discussion is information from the book of Revelation that seems to depict an epic battle as Satan and his angels rebel against God, engage in combat with Michael the archangel and angels led by him, resulting in the devil and his angels being cast out of heaven in Revelation 12:7 through 9. Was there a war in heaven such as this in a literal sense? We have to remember that the book of Revelation was written in signs and symbols about things that were to shortly come to pass in Revelation 1:1. Keeping that in mind, we can reframe the episode to embody another statement of how evil can't exist in the presence of God and how it will be dealt with. Satan has been present in the world since the beginning. He took the form of a serpent and tempted Eve in Genesis 3. He sought to destroy Job as he wandered to and fro in the earth in Job chapters 1 and 2. He's been present in the world working against God and his creation, seeking to keep humans from coming to the Lord and being saved. He's an evil being bent on destruction, and it's for him and his angels that hell was prepared in Matthew 25:41. The idea of being fallen is simply a statement that he sinned against God and continues to do so. Christ characterized him very well when he stated, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it," in John 8:44. We know about Satan through events recorded in the scriptures. He's an eternal supernatural being, but to my knowledge is never specifically referred to as an angel, although that's most likely the case. He has his followers, referred to as his angels, denoting control and leadership. In contrast, we have Michael the archangel, who leads other angels serving God which may be a parallel to the devil. Satan and his activities stand out due to their nature and the effect it's had on human life and spirituality. Aside from this information, we really don't have definitive statements about his origins. In a similar fashion, we have limitations on what we can know about angels. The word angel, translated from the Greek angelos, means messenger. Three individuals meet with Abraham, speaking of the son that he'll have, and then negotiate with him to save Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 18. Jacob encounters a supernatural being who wrestles with him on his way back to Canaan, resulting in a change of his name and a reminder of the event in the form of a limp in Genesis 32:24-31. When David numbered the people, a plague is brought on the land, and an angel with a sword is seen over Jerusalem in 2 Samuel 24:16-17. Manoah, the father of Samson, is told that he'll have a son by an angel in Judges 13:9-13, and an angel spoke to Gideon concerning God's command for him to deliver the land from the Midianites in Judges 6:11-14. Angels and supernatural beings appear in the visions of Ezekiel and, like the book of Revelation, are highly symbolic. In the biblical narrative, there are only two angels that are named: Michael the archangel and Gabriel. Gabriel delivers a series of visions to Daniel in Daniel 8:16 and Daniel 9:21, and later visits Mary and Joseph concerning the coming of Jesus the Messiah in Luke 1:19-26. Michael rebukes Satan, who desires to have the body of Moses in Jude 9, and as a prince of the people of God in Daniel 10:13, 21, and 12:1. In the symbolic book of Revelation, Michael and his angels fight against the dragon representing Satan in Revelation 12:7. Most of these references are fairly straightforward and can be understood to provide a small degree of insight into the majesty of God and his other servants. There are a few references that have gained a lot of attention over the years and are more elusive as they lack a full description of other supernatural beings, their appearance, or tasks. The earliest is the placement of the cherubims at the entrance to Eden, along with a flaming sword preventing Adam and Eve from returning in Genesis 3:24. A watcher is seen by Daniel in Daniel 4:13, and also by Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 4:17-23. The being is delivering a message when seen by the king, which is fulfilled in the madness that falls on Nebuchadnezzar. The watchers are described as holy ones, and that's the extent of the information we have concerning them. Another reference that may be related to the watchers is a statement made by the prophet Hanani to Asa, king of Judah, concerning the eyes of the Lord that run to and fro throughout the whole earth in 2 Chronicles 16:9. Isaiah describes the seraphim, multi-winged beings that accompany the Lord, in Isaiah 6:1-8. Nowhere do we have a detailed description of the angelic beings, their nature, or their work. The closest thing we have is David's description in the Psalms when he states, "What is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor," in Psalm 8:4-5. While religious interpretations have populated the supernatural realm with hierarchies of angels consisting of various ranks, there's no basis for this in the scriptures. God hasn't revealed that information, and for good reason. Dealing with Gnostic error in his letter to the Colossians, Paul states, "Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of angels, intruding into those things which he hath not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind," in Colossians 2:18. In the New Testament, we read of principalities and powers in spiritual places, but once more, we have no idea what those powers are or how they're ranked. We understand that there's evil and wickedness that permeates both the physical realm of mortals and the spiritual where Satan dwells. Why didn't God tell us more about the angelic realm and its inhabitants? The quick answer, based on reading the Bible, is we don't need to know. We may not like that answer or the reality it represents, but if God hasn't revealed it, It's not critical to our spiritual lives. Secondly, and probably the most important, is that we had wind up worshiping the servants rather than the master. We can see that example in the history of Israel. When Hezekiah came to the throne, he did much to revive and restore the worship of God. One of the things he did was to destroy the brazen serpent Moses had made in the wilderness. Hezekiah removed the high places and broke the images and cut down the groves and break in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made, for unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan in 2 Kings 18:4. Humans are superstitious in spite of God's revelation of His Word. We allow our imagination to get the best of us. And if there's no information given on a subject, some of us will fill in those gaps, either by speculation or something we want to convince others of as true. God has told us little of His servants, the angels. We know of cherubim and seraphim, but we don't know if that's a rank, a description of their tasks, or anything else. We only know two angels by name, Michael and Gabriel, and neither of them are to be revered or worshiped. Speculating or filling in the gaps is to intrude on things we haven't been informed about and therefore are infringing on God's domain. In most instances, angelic beings have appeared in a male human form and have been limited in the performance of their tasks. Like it or not, that's all we know by inspired scripture, and we need to respect that. The book of Enoch appears to focus on the watchers, who appear to be the angels who sin, are fallen, and mate with human women. We've talked about the seraphim and cherubim, and I noted that angels, such as Gabriel that appeared to Daniel, Mary, and Joseph, have the appearance of men. As I stated, this is all we know of the angels and other heavenly beings. When it comes to the watchers, we know even less. They're mentioned in only a few passages that provide little information about them. Daniel speaks of them in a vision. I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and an holy one came down from heaven, in Daniel 4:13. This being then delivers a judgment against Nebuchadnezzar, who will later be driven from humans and live as an animal for 7 years. At the end of this pronouncement, there's a statement of finality delivered, emphasizing that this is inevitable and is the decree of God. This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men in Daniel 4:17. Daniel then relays this information to Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 4:23. The conclusion we can draw from this is that the watcher was a being, probably an angel, in service to God, delivering a message through a vision to Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar. The book of Enoch appears to equate these beings to the sons of God in Genesis 6 and to characterize them as beings who have strayed from their assigned position and task. That might make for a good story, but the parallel doesn't hold up from a biblical perspective. Not only are the two references not similar, they certainly lack any equivalence. There isn't anything else said about the watchers. The only similarity that I can find is a description that appears in the record of the fall of Judah. King Asa of Judah is rebuked for not relying on the Lord by the prophet Hanani. Hanani reminds Asa of how the Lord helped him overcome their enemies in the past and states, "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him," in 2 Chronicles 16:9. This may be a reference to beings such as the watchers, or it could be a description of God's vigilance over his people and his knowledge of what happens in the world. In the absence of anything more definitive, we can't be certain. What we can know is that God is aware of what happens, and he delivers his people from their enemies if they're faithful to him.